This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
It's probably safe to assume that there's always been a tension in Buddhism and maybe all other faith traditions between what you might call, don't just sit there, do something, and don't just do something, sit there. So nowadays we have engaged Buddhism. And so just to some degree, those folks are heeding the don't just sit there, do something point of view. And others resolutely refuse to be involved in activities outside the meditation hall. And so they're don't just do something, sit there. That's that crew. So there's a little, there's some dynamic there. Probably, and especially maybe nowadays, both are necessary. There is there's trouble enough in the world for several lifetimes for everyone. And sometimes it seems easier to first address the trouble that's here and then see if you can be of some assistance. And sometimes people feel it's just too urgent. The need is too urgent, so they must go right away and try and take care of things. Even if here things are not quite settled. So I don't have any particular advice. Except that I notice I live in a Buddhist temple. And I'm a little embarrassed to admit that I don't go out looking for things to do. It seems like there's plenty to take care of right here. And each day offers opportunity to be of some help. So I guess the pivotal issue is if we haven't found some peace, can we be effective as helpers, and can we avoid being caught up in the so to speak, the karmic backwash, which is sometimes, you know, as a riptide. And before you know it, you're caught up in the toils of greed, hatred, and confusion. So I understand there are maybe workshops or something where people who are going to be politically engaged and who are Dharma practitioners, there's some teaching about how to participate in an event involving a lot of people, where, of course, the energy is very easily kind of thrown off kilter. So topics like how to keep your head when the police are charging or something. So I suppose I would say that while it's clear there's so much to do, it's important that we thoroughly prepare ourselves. It's a legitimate question. How is sitting on a cushion preparing us for a more engaged relationship to the world? More than a few of our legendary ancestors, it seems, advised against anything besides retreating deep into the mountains to a monastery and staying there 20 years. And while I'm sure there are people today who do that, I myself spent quite a few years in that way of living. The urgency of our overall human situation is increasing. And as the urgency increases, the tendency for people to get excited also increases. So for that reason, I suppose I have to confess that my bias is in favor of settling the heart. Before engaging in potentially difficult circumstances. And if we wonder, how do you settle the heart? Well, one way is to compose the body mind and let the heart settle itself. If you're convinced that the heart won't do that without your deliberate intervention, then maybe you won't be so comfortable with that approach. The other day I was struck by the energy, the life, our animation. Which manifests with every breath and every beat of the heart, is actually holy. So without adding or subtracting anything, there's something holy happening all the time. Pretty much regardless of what our life is like. And if we are pretty well acquainted with that, it makes a substantial difference. So I'm not sure if you know what I mean. If we sit in stillness and simply observe all the phenomena of our life, I guess you could say, well, it could be anything. I mean, why do you say it's holy? Especially since it's holy in a way that is not graspable. So in other words, it's not that there's some, I don't know, golden light, or you don't hear angels' wings or something, or if you do, maybe you should be hospitalized for a while. But so this is the kind of holy that our old friend Bodhidharma meant when he said, nothing holy. I know you're all familiar with that story. Whether or not it historically took place is maybe not so important. But it's a very clear instance of the assertion of the ungraspable holy in the face of a much more traditional point of view. Namely, the holy things are, well, you build and endow monasteries and support the monks and get scriptures translated and so on. Those are all holy things. And having cataloged such efforts along those lines as the emperor had made, he asks Bodhidharma. So that's pretty holy stuff, huh? And Bodhidharma says, no. The emperor was not entirely tickled to hear that. So he says, well, what about the four holy truths? The Sanskrit word "arya" doesn't exactly mean holy. It means more like, I don't know, noble or elevated, something like that. And sometimes it's translated as holy. So the emperor asks, what about those holy truths? What's their ultimate significance? And Bodhidharma says, vast, empty, no holy. And it is said the emperor did not understand. I'm sure Bodhidharma was hoping that the emperor would somehow, by Bodhidharma's strange words, be turned towards the holy you can't grasp. That which animates everything in the universe. And you can't capture or see or put in a bottle and sell it. And yet, it is so obvious. After all, as you sit here now, what is happening? Maybe you think you know what that is, although I would be surprised. whatever it is, it's so clearly deserving of the word holy. That should be the hub, I think, or I suggest, of all of our activity, of whatever kind. I guess we have a visitor. I was reading that some people were doing research on exercise, and they had some young and healthy people doing like a 10-minute sprint on a stationary bicycle. And then they measured all kinds of factors that had changed, and there were more than 1,000 of them. And they said they had some idea about 1/10 of them. And the rest of those changes, they had no idea what they were about. So this points us once again into the mystery of our body-mind. And towards the unguessable source of this life. So to understand ourselves in this careful way as holy people, sometimes called the people of God, or people of the way, people of faith, that means that we then also start to understand other people that way. And maybe we begin to understand Bodhidharma's saying, "No, holy." And his meaning, all that stuff you know that's you think is holy, none of that is holy. The vastness of what we don't know and yet animates us moment after moment, that is holy. Understanding our life in this way changes things. And then should the call come to maybe join in some bigger effort to take care of some of the problems that are plaguing us in our world, you can do so with some peace. Orienting your own life in a way that honors the holy will touch other lives. So just to be clear, in our sitting practice, I am definitely not suggesting you go looking for the holy. But recognize the holy is where you are. Which makes us all people of the way. Children of Buddha. Children of God. I think that's about all I have to say today. Do you have some question? Enjoyed spending this time with you, holy people. Thank you very much.